Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This episode sponsored by She's Birdie. Every woman knows that feeling, and She's Birdie knows it too. The just in case feeling. Just in case I hear something. Just in case someone tries the door. Just in case I need to wake up fast. It's not fear, it's awareness. And Birdie Box from She's Birdie was made for exactly that. Birdie Box is a portable travel door alarm designed by She's Birdie for hotels, dorms, Airbnbs, and anywhere you're staying away from home. It installs in seconds on the doorframe, and if the door is opened, it activates a loud siren and flashing strobe to help draw attention instantly. She's Birdie, because peace of mind should check in with you. Birdie Box by She's Birdie. Visit shesbirdie.com. That's shesbirdie.com. And order your Birdie Box before your next stay away from home.
Third and final hour of the Thursday edition. Robbie and Rex are here, 102.5-106 through the game. Paul Kuharski in for Robbie. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we're going to get back into the Titans here after a little college baseball break. PK, you have written more on the Titans. You were writing a lot on the Titans at paulkoharski.com. And injuries, health, these are big things. These are always things in an NFL. Training camp for an NFL team. What have you discovered about the Tennessee Titans?
I pledged to do this yesterday to kind of go through the depth chart because – how many guys do we talk about and we say, if healthy? And so I thought it would make sense to kind of go through the key guys on this team who we talk about, who we say, if healthy, and discuss these guys. I try to put them kind of in order. Now, look, anybody can get hurt. We know that. And some of these guys are going to get hurt. And some of these guys with injury histories are qualified differently. And so we'll add the nuance to that. And number one is Jamal Adams. I hope Jeff Simmons isn't listening because I'll get blocked. I mean,
you just want to get blocked so badly.
No,
you're
so
jealous, aren't you?
I don't. He's had severe injury struggles in the last 4 years. He's missed 24 of his last 39 games. Now, you know, that's a massive, massive injury loss. I think he spent almost a year on crutches with no weight on this leg after his most recent knee injury. So Jamal Adams can help this team, if healthy, as a blitzing safety, as a big nickel against tight ends. As a dime linebacker, but we might not see any of it if he hurts himself again. Treylon Burks.
It's interesting that you started with him because I still look at him as, you know, not a hugely important player this year. But I mean, you're not wrong.
I don't think he's hugely important, but I think he.
You're not going in order of importance here.
But he could be a factor on this team if healthy. Treylon Burks. A factor, if healthy, he's missed 12 of a possible 34 games. Toe injury, concussion, groin injury, knee injury, and another concussion. How nice would it be if the Titans actually had this complete wide receiving core and Treylon Burks developed into something, some version of what they imagined when they drafted him to be part of replacing A.J. Brown? He's got some limitations. It takes him some time to get up to speed. But he can get downfield and do some things when healthy, if healthy. He's one of these guys, and there are some guys on this list who we've gotten beyond the point of expecting to be healthy. I think most Titans fans, most Titans media expect him not to be healthy. Expect that there will be a day at practice in the coming weeks where something happens to Treylon Burks, a hamstring, a knee, a concussion, God forbid. But something's going to happen to Treylon Burks is the prevailing wisdom. Kyle Phillips, I don't think makes the roster. We talked about this earlier. He's right now ranks third in the slot, I would say, to Tyler Boyd, who's going to be there 80% of the time. Jaquan Jackson, a draft pick that they obviously like for the position and like as the punt returner. You're not going to keep three guys who are slot-specific receivers. Kyle Phillips, a terrific practice player who does really impressive things in short areas with his quickness. Was not used, I don't think, properly when he was available by the previous staff. Maybe this staff loves him and finds a way to keep him on the roster, but he's got to be healthy. And this guy has had shoulder, hamstring, knee, and hamstring injuries. Those and the subsequent loss of the punt returner job that left him inactive for some games where he was healthy means he's played only 13 of 34 games. Can't play 13 of 34 games and be a guy who's going to be a factor. Can't do that and be a guy who's going to be on the roster. Legarius Sneed hasn't missed a lot of games. He's missed a lot of practices. And so you're rooting for him to be a guy who's managed on a regular basis in a way that he can appear on game day, which is what Rand Carthon basically said when they traded for him. We're willing to accept missed practices in order for him to be ready to play on Sundays, because when he's played in games for the Chiefs, he's been an excellent player. And we're trading for that excellent player. And we'll take what comes with having to get him ready to play in the games to be an excellent player. Does that devolve into something more where the knee that's problematic keeps him out of games in addition to keeping him out of practices? That's something we're all keeping an eye on, right? That's something that you have to worry about. Legarius needs a great player if healthy. Amani Hooker. Team's number one safety. We've talked over and over about what's going on next to him with Molden, with Adams, with the hope of Justin Simmons later with his price coming down, with the hope of Condre Diggs maybe being a late addition. Last 3 years, Hooker's missed time with the groin, a concussion, a shoulder, and a knee. Missing stretches of 6 games, 3 games, 3 games, 2 games. And another game here and there along the way. His durability, huge factor for the Titans. Because I think if you lose Amani Hooker, you're in real trouble at the back end.
Yeah, imagine this secondary in a given Sunday without Sneed and Hooker, which is a very real possibility at some
changes,
point this year.
Changes the complete face of the team. Chidobe Awuzie. Missed 7 games because of a hamstring injury in 2020 and 9 in 2022 with a torn ACL. So he's 2 years removed from the serious injury. This is a much better position for the Titans with the ACL guy than they've had recently. We've seen guys in their first year back from ACL, Robert Woods, Taylor Lewan, Harold Landry, and you've had to wait for those guys to emerge from that, which takes – half a season or more.
Yeah, Landry was pretty good, but yes.
Landry was
you
pretty
want that
good.
Next year.
Lewan got hurt again. Woods wasn't anything special. So Awuzie's at a much better spot, and we're expecting him to return to his top level. Overall, through 7 seasons, he missed 22 of a possible 114 games, 19% to injuries. And that's not counting some games where he was just inactive or he missed one for COVID. Saahdiq Charles, we're thinking, is the starting right guard. Mike Herndon wrote about him on June 6th at my site. Suffered a calf strain during the 2020 offseason, then dislocated a kneecap to cut his rookie season short. Next season, missed the final game of the year with another knee injury. 2022, cut short due to a concussion and another calf injury that popped up last year. Calf problems been somewhat chronic. If his calf injury pops up again, this is the thing that's held him back. Washington really liked him. He did really well in Washington. He kept getting nicked up. If Saahdiq Charles gets nicked up here in training camp or during the season, he's a prominent factor in what they're expecting to do on the offensive line. Even if somehow he's not a star, he's a top-flight backup for them. But can't have him hurt. Saahdiq Charles is a big factor for this team. If healthy. Elijah Molden, who we're not even sure should be the guy next to Amani Hooker, though I think we would all pencil him in there right now. If they don't get Simmons, if they don't get Diggs, if Adams doesn't outplay him in training camp and maybe overtake him there. Missed two games last year with the hamstring, 15 games the year before with the groin. If you're looking for a soft tissue injury guy who's left after Christian Fulton and after David Long, it's probably Elijah Molden. You hope he benefits from the new sports performance staff, but he doesn't have a great record so far. Elijah Molden, a key player for this team, if healthy.
He's a real quick. He's a great example. You're right. He is the guy who was with all those guys and having those issues. And it's possible he gets over it. It's also possible he gets over it because he
had
healed
some bad luck.
And had some bad luck before and gets some good luck. But if he does, it will be attributed to the new, right?
No matter what.
Whether it's true or not, it will be attributed to it. But that's how it goes. The results lead the discussion.
Ryan Stonehouse, not injury prone by any means, suffered a gruesome injury from a terrible play. Coach got fired for it. But we have no idea the state of his knee and lower leg, which got mangled.
He looked all right moving
against
around.
Against the Colts December 3rd. He looked all right moving around, but there's a big difference between moving around
and crushing it
and planting that leg with all the force you put on it to pound a football. We don't know when he's going to be ready. So he'll be healthy at some point, but that's somebody we're keeping an eye on. Colton Dowell, undoubtedly starting the season on PUP, suffered the torn ACL week 17 against Houston. He's going to be out of the picture. Jeffrey Simmons, I add at the bottom of this list. He's done well to tough out injuries the last two seasons, but he's not injury prone, but he's been unlucky. Wasn't the same after that 2 years ago. That injury was earlier than most of us remember. Week 7, the ankle injury in 2021. Then last year, week 13.
Wait, 2022. 2022.
2022, sorry.
Yep.
Week 13 knee injury last year ended his season, though he probably could have played if anything was at stake. The knee had him questionable 2 years ago for 6 weeks and out for 2 weeks, and he was not the same. Also, Danico Autry was missing for some of that, which really hurt him. The ankle cost him 5 games. If healthy, Jeffrey Simmons is a hell of a player if he's got good people next to him. If he's not healthy, you know, he's toughing it out, but he's not the same level of player. Others you put on this list, Nicholas Petit-Frere is coming back from that shoulder from last year. We haven't seen him yet. Tony Pollard, you hope, is in the same situation as Awuzie, where he's a year removed from a serious injury. Kenneth Murray missed the last two games of last season with a shoulder injury, didn't participate in the offseason. And Tavondre Sweat, I said yesterday near the end of OTAs, Callahan said he was confident Sweat would be ready. A week out, I'm hearing he's expected to be back. We're not sure if that's a downgrade or just semantics.
All right, we come back. I've got a big question for PK on all this information. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Paul Karski in for Robbie Stanley. We're jamming out to some Rush here, which is a much, much better band than Bush, might I add.
If you like to listen to a nasally guy who sounds like he winds his way through every song.
I can't believe you're going to disrespect Geddy Lee like that. This is one of your worst takes.
It's got an awful voice.
You think Bush is better than Rush? Replace one letter. Take the R out, put the B in, you immediately start circling the drain.
I hate terrible vocalists.
Please help me out, people. Please help me out.
I smoke weed constantly.
Rush is way, way better than Bush.
Answer my question.
Okay.
Do you think he has a pleasant voice? His voice is horrific.
I mean, pleasant? He's a rock singer. I think he sings a lot of great songs, and his voice does not bother me whatsoever.
His voice is
horrific.
He's
also a great bass player, and they might have the greatest drummer of all time. But
that's a typical Rush answer.
Okay.
You go straight to the drummer. Neil Peart is the answer to everything regarding Rush.
I like
it. It takes more than a good drummer to be a good band.
I like Geddy Lee's voice. I like it. Absolutely. I mean, maybe it would be annoying if, like, you were sitting there all day long back and forth with Geddy Lee talking about mundane things. But, yeah, I think his voice works great.
I'd rather converse with him than hear him sing.
Songs. Mm. Well, Dennis says Springsteen has the voice of an angel. That's sarcasm.
A rock and roll voice.
That's sarcasm for you. I think Geddy Lee has a rock and roll voice. It's a different rock and roll voice.
Yeah, if you suck in helium before you sing, that's a rock and that's a helium rock and roll voice.
Incredible. All right, so on your Titans, that's quite a list of if healthy Titans. My question for you is, and I know you don't have like a snappy quick answer, but do you feel like, because we know, as Adam brought up earlier, the Titans set the record for players used, you know, back to back years. But do you think that this is a list like this is where do you think it would if you did this for every team in the league? How do you think this would fit into that context?
I think it'd be high. I think it would be high. I mean, I think they've gotten rid of some problematic people. Christian Fulton, off the top of my head, is one. Look, I know this is not a popular stance. I think the number one thing that's worked against the Titans with injuries is luck. And so I think their luck is due to change. And like you said, when their luck changes, if their luck changes, they will get credit for
for
whatever Callahan changes in terms of a practice style and all of that. And I won't say that there weren't things about the way Vrabel operated that may have added to the potential for it. But we'll also see. In the first 2 weeks here, Vrabel was huge on these 6 weeks away and what guys did to keep themselves ready. Are we going to see some soft injury stuff for guys coming back here? If we do, then I think that we should all say, hey, Vrabel was right about these 6 weeks and about guys being prepared. And he gets a little bit of a hand washing on some of them.
Or you could also say, okay, so they get some bad luck.
Continued bad luck.
Yeah.
Which Vrabel, I don't think, came right out and said, but believed. And again, you know, I'll use the most recent bad injury. Colton Dowell running down the sideline, double teamed on special teams, tearing an ACL, is not preventable by any training methods.
Exactly. Yeah, it depends on the the soft tissue stuff is that's the stuff that, okay, what can you do? What kind of different things
can
you do?
And soft tissue injuries were down last year.
Yeah.
Nicholas Petitfrere hurting his shoulder in line play
has nothing to
is
do
a
with
football
any,
injury.
It has nothing to do with any sort of program, practice schedule, anything like that. It's purely the game of football, and nasty things happen to these bodies all the time.
And I think the general consensus amongst the best analysts in football is that maybe the top 15% and the bottom 15% have some training or stylistic issues involved, but that generally teams have lucky and unlucky years injury-wise. I've talked to people about it. I think I asked Kyle Shanahan about it. I asked Adam Peters about it at the Combine, who was with San Francisco and is now GM of the Commanders. And they said, injury luck was great for us, Adam Peters said, the 1 year that we went to the Super Bowl. Injury luck is something that teams know they need in their best years.
There's a million would-be champions that have bad luck, and there are a lot of champions that it's amazing how they just – and again, you can give them credit. You can blame them when they have bad luck. Tyler on the text line says, I've been told by players that other teams did more preventive maintenance. I guess we can nickname that, quote, luck.
Well, we'll see how preventative maintenance goes now, because
things have changed. They explored that. Like, again, maybe they got the wrong answers and they just had bad ideas, but they certainly did not sit around saying, yeah, it's fine, it'll be fine.
But again, preventative maintenance doesn't stop Colton Dowell's injury. It doesn't stop Nick Petitfrere's injury.
Of course not. You can go through all these guys. Okay. Again, to me, it's purely groin, hamstring,
soft tissue,
things like that. Okay. There may be things you can do. Now, was there some sort of failure in preparation that got Elijah Molden that really brutal, like, kind of sports hernia injury? I doubt it, but that's what he had, soft tissue. But you go through these, and like Jeff Simmons, I mean,
an ankle and a knee.
The ankle is, yeah, I mean, those you aren't preventing them. Other than you don't step on the guy's foot, or you don't plant here and twist. I mean, like, you know, this whole topic is, I do think that.
Fans make it too cut and dry.
Well, of course, you want accountability, right? Like, you want an answer, like, why is this happening to us over and over again? I do think some of the answer was a willingness to overlook it. And I do wonder if, like, Chad Brinker's model for trying to basically, I think, track injury history better, right, for guys. I mean, if that's kind of a way of simplifying it.
He seems to think there's more predictive possibilities than sound believable to me. I would love to sit down with him. I hope I get a chance at some point, or one of us does, for him to explain the predictive qualities. I think the best thing is to stay away from guys with injury histories. Like you're saying, don't draft guys who've been hurt. Don't sign Bud Dupree while you know you're going to have to wait on him for a year to recover from a torn ACL.
Right. Yeah, no. Without
or Robert
question.
Wood.
And obviously Caleb Farley. I mean, that's...
Or Caleb, draft Caleb Farley, exactly.
But I'd love to think that there are more factors that can work as predictive measures. Look, when it comes down to it, still the biggest, I mean, the biggest story, I think, in football in the last 20 years is the concussion situation and CTE and everything. And, I mean, to me, like, I hope at some point, we can have there could be a way to diagnose someone and say, you are vulnerable, you are susceptible, you should not play this game, because some people clearly are and some people clearly aren't, right? I mean, to me, like, there are people who've gone through and taken the beating and don't seem to be affected, and some people who are affected greatly, right? Is there a way for that to be predictive someday?
And you know, a minor, a seemingly minor thing, like you can wear a guardian cap in a game now. You probably were there when Chig Okonkwo talked about it this year, and he said, not a single guy's going to wear that guardian cap. Why? Fashion.
Yeah, because it looks goofy. Yeah, I if it helps you and it does not impede your movement whatsoever, I mean, who cares? You're already running around in, you know, like pajama pants with pads in them, if you really want to look at it, right?
I tend to agree with him, though. I bet we don't see many, especially early.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, are there a few guys who start to do it and say, heck yeah, I'm going to be safer, and then it becomes, okay, whatever. It just becomes a normal thing to see people running around out there like they have, who's the guy from Buffalo? The big helmet. You know what I'm talking about.
Wasn't Tasker, was it?
It wasn't Tasker. Somebody help me on the text line. It was not Steve Tasker. Hair Mellow Henry said, if Paul listened to more Rush, we would all bring him in closer to the heart. Well done, Hair Mellow Henry.
Closer to the heart.
All right, we come back. We've got Sam Kahn Jr. We're going to switch gears, talk a little bit of SEC football. We've ignored SEC media days largely.
Mark Kelso.
Thank you. Kelso with the big helmet. But we've ignored SEC media days. We're going to get into that a little bit. There are some interesting developments down there in Texas. Coming up next, Robbie Rexo, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie Rexo, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Joe Rexo here. Paul Kaharski in for Robbie Stanley. Very excited to welcome in our next guest from Dallas, Texas, where I think today is the last day of SEC media days. And Sam Kahn Jr., fantastic writer covering college football. We call Sam the Texpert. He is the Texpert at The Athletic. He writes all things Texas and all things college football. Sam, how's it going down there in Dallas?
It is good. It's unseasonably cool right now, which I'm going to knock on wood and take that as a win, because when I got here a couple days ago, it was about 100 degrees. But it was actually cool enough to sit outside and eat dinner last night. So I'm going to take that as a win and hope it lasts for this last day here.
That is wild, because yeah, we're still, I guess we're getting cooler today, but yeah, we've been pushing 100 here. So, well, that's good. That's good to hear. So first of all, I want to get into this fantastic story that you and Max Olson and Bruce Feldman did on sort of the butterfly effect of Nick Saban retiring, which is a fascinating story. But first of all, this week, Sam, I think today, like Mike Elko, you know, you got another Texas guy talking today, Texas A&M, of course, head coach. But this week for you, what would maybe the two or three things that stand out to you as the most interesting?
Well, first, I'll start with this, and you kind of referenced him. The presence of Nick Saban here at this thing, but not as a coach, has been fascinating to watch. Just watching him be on the TV set, you know, doing the SEC Network coverage and walking around. He actually interviewed Kalen DeBoer yesterday, which was an interesting dynamic. That has been fascinating to watch because I still feel like he carries the star power that he did as a head coach. And it's obviously because he only retired 6 months ago. But that has been fascinating to me. And then, obviously, Kalen DeBoer having his first step up to the mic as the Alabama coach, that has been interesting to see. And also for me, yesterday, Steve Sarkisian in Texas was here. I was wondering if they were going to get a lot of questions like Texas A&M and Missouri did 12 years ago when they first made their debut at SC Media Days, and people asking them, hey, are you guys ready for the SEC? Do you know what to expect? And I didn't sense that. I sensed a lot of respect for Texas, a sense that they're ready to come in and compete right away. And I think obviously that has a lot to do with what they did last year, making the college football playoff, winning the 12, the way Sark has recruited and built that roster. It tells me that nobody's expecting them to come in and be a punching bag. I think Oklahoma got some more questions along those lines because I think people have questions about how competitive they'll be and a little bit more uncertainty about whether they're ready for this grind in this conference. But it was fascinating to me to watch how people talked and viewed both of those teams, the newcomers coming in.
Well, that's one question I have for you, Sam. What's the better program? And I know this is a very subjective, you know, topic of how you judge a program, but what's the better program in your mind, Texas or Oklahoma?
I mean, historically, it's Oklahoma because they have more national championships. They have a better track record. And even in the last 25 years, they won the Big 12 6 years in a row up until 2021. They have been better over time. But right now, if you're trying to decide which one of these teams is more equipped for the SEC, which of these teams is more equipped to compete for a national championship, it's Texas. And it's because of the way Steve Sarkisian has recruited across the board, not just at quarterback, which gets a lot of attention because they've got Quinn Ewers, they've got Arch Manning, and they've got a lot of offensive skill talent. But they've done a hell of a job recruiting the line of scrimmage. And you saw that last year when they played Alabama, when they went to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama, not just, you know, by a touchdown or by, some stroke of luck. They beat them at the line of scrimmage. And now I think it still remains to be seen if they can do that every single week in the SEC. But the fact that they are equipped physically to do that, I think, makes them right now better positioned in the near term.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, obviously Texas has underwhelmed for a long time, but I mean Sark, as you know, I mean he's good. He's really good, and I think they're going to be fascinating this year and beyond in the league. Also, again, I want to talk about the Saban story, but just Kalen DeBoer. It's an impossible task to follow Nick Saban. Also, I think he's really good, and so far this phase of his job, I'm impressed with how things have kind of been held together and in terms of roster building and things like that. What do you think is fair to expect of him, like, in the next 5 years as Alabama's coach?
Oh, man. I tell you, I don't know if he's going to get a fair shake, at least from the Alabama fans. I think those of us on the outside looking in and viewing that program and knowing the track record that follows him with Saban, or precedes him, rather, that's impossible to live up to. Let's just be honest. Nobody is going to replicate what Nick Saban did at Alabama. Nobody, especially with as much as college football has changed now. I think it's impossible to accumulate the talent to dominate the way that he did in his time there. But I do think that Alabama couldn't really matter many better options. I thought Alabama made a fine choice in Kalen. And you look at what he's done now. Now, I know it hasn't been at the highest level, but he has won everywhere he's been. He's won at the Division III level. He's won at the Group of Five level. He's won at the Power Five level and took Washington to a national championship. And I am encouraged, like you said, with the roster building. The way they've recruited so far, the amount of five stars they're getting is what you would expect under a Saban program. So they're clearly doing something right in recruiting. And I think that was the biggest question about Kalen. Nobody questions that Kalen DeBoer can coach ball. Everybody knows he's a really good offensive mind. He's a really good head coach, and that's been proven with what he's done with his program. But to the recruiting and whether he could recruit at the high level in the SEC, I think, was the big question. And so far, 6-7 months in, he's doing a pretty good job. So I'm really encouraged by that. And I think it's fair to expect, hey, get to the playoff this year, you know, maybe win a game. But Alabama fans are going to want him to win a national championship within probably the first 3 years. And that's, you know, I don't think that's unrealistic. But if you don't do it, what are you going to do after 3 years? Are you going to move on? Are you going to make a change? And I think that's what makes the situation so difficult for him, is that I don't know that there's a way to ever meet the expectations following Nick Saban.
These media days are more and more of an entertainment event. I know Sam Pittman, Mike Elko, you Freeze, Mark Stoops still to talk today. Who's the worst performer, least captivating?
Who's the worst quote
that you've seen?
Well, it's good. I'm going to tell you, it's about to be in 25 minutes when I talk to him in a minute. It's going to be Mike Elko at Texas A&M. And you know what? He's totally okay with that, because I have noticed that ever since he got to Texas A&M, there has been, I think, a purposeful downplaying of everything A&M. Not about the school, but about the program, because they were, in a way, I think, under Jimbo Fisher, a little bit overexposed. You know, they were in the headlines for their number one recruiting class a few years ago. Of course, we all remember the spat that he had with Nick Saban verbally. Hit a contract that he was given the extension after the 2020 season. So many reasons that A&M was in the headlines, and it wasn't about their football team. It wasn't about the actual play on the field. And I think Mike Elko has been very intentional about laying low, being under the radar. Don't make any noise. Let's just let our play and our performance on the field do the talking. So today, when he steps up to the mic in about 20 minutes, I anticipate he's going to say nothing that gives us headline material. Even when he did the rubber chicken tour, I like to call it, when he did his speaking events to some of these alumni clubs around the state of Texas, I went to a couple of them, and buddy, he's not saying anything that's going to grab a headline. So not even to the alumni clubs. he entertained them and he gave them some fun stuff, but nothing that you're going to post online is going to be like, oh my gosh, can you believe what Mike Elko said? He's not going to do that. He's going to be the most milquetoast, boring quote possible, and I think that is by design. So that is going to be, of the 16 coaches here, that's going to be your guy who's going to be the least interesting.
With Saban out, Kirby Smart is now the guy of those 16. How well suited is he to that? How much you think he likes being that guy? As unexpected as maybe it was for him to reach that level now.
I think certainly the spotlight is not something that I necessarily think he loves, and certainly doing all these things, but Nick Saban didn't love it either. And so, but it didn't stop him from being good. I think the thing that Kirby understands and probably appreciates is that he's in the position to not just be the team that contends for national title, but to be the dominant alpha dog in this conference. Because Saban was that. There's a little bit of a vacuum now. And Kirby can kind of fill that. He's already kind of on the way there. When you look at the level of program he's built at Georgia, you look at the level they recruit, you look at the way they beat teams and the way they wear them down and the way they beat them up physically, I think he wants to be that guy. And I think that's part of his goal, is to, hey, let's make ourselves the next dominant program. But the way to do that is going to be because he worked under Nick Saban, it's going to be the old Saban method. It's going to be, hey, we're not going to think about 2-3 years in the future. We're going to think about today. We're going to think about this season, and we're going to think about beating the crap out of whoever's in front of us. And I tell you, he's done a great job. Certainly rose to stardom a lot quicker than I anticipated. You know, I think everybody knew when he was defensive coordinator there that he was going to be successful wherever he went. But to take Georgia into national contention as quickly as he did at Georgia, I thought was eye-opening, and now he's been able to sustain it over time. And I think that is, if you're looking at a program to succeed Alabama as the next big-time, you know, champion, you multi-time champion over the years and annual contender, it's Georgia, no doubt about it.
Talking to Sam Kahn Jr., the Texpert at The Athletic. Last thing for you, Sam, I want people to read this story that you guys did on on Nick Saban. It's such a fascinating piece. Just tell the listener a little bit about how it came about and what you guys discovered about just the domino effect of that one decision and you know, which according to him, you know, he made in a brief period of time.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, we all knew that at some point Nick Saban was going to retire, but nobody knew when. And I think it's fair to say that when it happened in mid-January, that we were a little bit surprised by the timing because we had gotten through the end of the season. It was starting to get to winter conditioning. And, oh, all of a sudden, right 2 days after national championship, Saban's gone. And Max Olson, as you mentioned, Bruce Feldman, who worked on this story with me on the butterfly effect and all the chain reaction of coaching moves around the country, 423 total. We have done stories like this before. Max and Bruce did one on the Egg Bowl a few years ago when both of those coaches got fired. Max did one about Mac Brown 10 years ago to track, okay, how many moves happen as a result? Not just the moves on that staff, but then the staff that follow that, like Kalen DeBoer, all the Washington staff moves. Then Jed Fish, all the Arizona staff moves. Brent Brennan, all the San Jose State staff moves, because all those coaches followed. So we follow that chain reaction. And like I said, 423 either coaches or staffers. We're not just talking head coaches. We're not talking assistant coach. We're also talking strength and conditioning, player development, administrative assistants, nutrition, you know, all these people. Because when one head coach leaves, 50 or 60 different people in a staff are going to be impacted. And not just them, but also their families, because they're wondering when Maurice Linguist leaves Buffalo from the head coach to be a DB's coach and co-DC at Alabama, all those people at Buffalo are wondering, am I going to have a job? And that was fascinating to us. And just, we started it the day after Saban retired to start tracking all the moves. Max Olson is the MVP for doing the spreadsheet for tracking every single one of those moves. And we tried to help him fill some of the blanks, but he did the legwork on following every one of those moves and trying to figure out, because guess what? Not all these people are covered. The nutritionist at Buffalo, maybe we may not know if and when they stayed, and if they don't even have a bio on their team site. And so it was a fun project to work on. It was fun to talk to, you know, the 20 some odd coaches that we talked to and understand all the different points there are at their lives. You know, why some of these head coaches made the moves they did, but also some of the coaches way down the chain. I talked to a junior college coach in Texas who, you know, five steps from Saban's retirement, ended up getting a promotion from defensive coordinator to head coach at his junior college, and he makes a fraction of what Nick Saban does, and he has way different problems than what Nick Saban does, but he still loves ball just as much as Nick Saban does. And my favorite quote was the one he told us, is that, you know what, every football coach has problems. It's just that Nick Saban has Mercedes-Benz problems and we have Hyundai problems. And I thought that was a very astute way to put it, because even though the worlds are so different, this still, football coaching profession is still so interconnected.
No doubt. And speaking of fun, apparently Nick Saban is now fun, which is wild to see. Sam Kahn Jr., the textbook. Thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it. And I want you to get there and get a good seat, because it sounds like Elko is going to be a blast. So enjoy that.
Thanks so much, guys. Y'all take care. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Sam Kahn Jr., the textbook at The Athletic, talking college football. We come back, we'll react to him a little bit and talk a little bit about the GOAT, Nick Saban. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Final segment, Robbie Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Paul Kuharski in. Great stuff there from Sam Kahn Jr., the Texpert. I just love the nickname. It's just such a great nickname, the Texpert. He lives in Texas. He covers all the Texas teams. And now that means he's writing more about SEC football. What do you think, real quick, PK, about the Saban dynamic? I must say, and I'm hopeful, that it's true of Bill Belichick, too. Once he, you know, gets off the carousel, these gruff, you know, gritty, non-communicative coaches are all of a sudden going to be just breaths of fresh air.
Oh, I hate them on the media.
You hate them on the media?
No, I like them in the media. I hate that they thrive in the media and get on camera and laugh and giggle and buddy up to their colleagues
after
they were complete bleep holes to the media for the bulk of their career. I think it makes them gigantic hypocrites. And I think you can't – I hate that fans look at it and love it without pausing to consider that when they were on the other side, they were complete jerks.
You know, I must say, there are times when you surprise me even with your ability to find something to complain about. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, I guess to me it's like if you bring something to the fan and even to us watching and that was and you're willing to bring it out now, and you bring value, I'm here for it. But I mean, you're not wrong. It's, you know, Saban, I've talked about him a lot. He actually progressed through his career to the point where by the end at Alabama, he had mellowed a lot.
Saban's a liar. Saban stood and told respectable professionals who were working hard that he wasn't going to Alabama. Then he was surprised when those people were sitting in the first row of the Alabama introductory press conference. All right, Belichick increasingly had no interest in helping people like Mike Reese, who works his butt off up there to be as fair as possible and never publicly got frustrated with being nearly berated on a daily basis. I stand with my colleagues. And so that those people now get up and smile holding a microphone, doing the same job as some of those people, irritates the hell out of me.
See, this could have been a good rant. Well, still he's going to be disappointed as he listens to this whole show because I think he got one mention. He said yesterday that all you do is complain about him for 3 hours. But now he's complaining about you. I do want to bring this to your attention. He says, Holmgren was a disappointment. I'm sorry that Super Bowl appearance didn't count. He made the playoffs 5 years in a row. And to Paul's point about second-chance coaches, that Andy Reid really sucks, huh? Reid is a good example. I would agree with PK, though. I got to take your side versus Stilley on Holmgren. Yes, he made the Super Bowl. They lost to young Roethlisberger and the Steelers in Detroit in 06. But he was not what was promised. And he was 4-6.
Also, he went to Cleveland as an executive and did very poorly.
And look, they went 4-6 in the playoffs in his time there, so they won a couple games during that particular run. And again, a Super Bowl is a Super Bowl. I'm not disputing it, but that was also his only season with more than 10 wins in Seattle. I mean, his total Seattle record was 86-74, you know, 541 winning percent. That was not what was promised when the great Mike Holmgren came to Seattle and was given the keys to everything. So I think I'm gonna score one for you,
okay,
against Stilley.
Well, let's go with this.
But Andy Reid is a good point.
Andy Reid's a great point. I found a story. Best second chance coaches. Bill Belichick. I said the first chance was terrible.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm talking about a guy who was good and then was good again. So right. Belichick doesn't count. Don Shula, excellent. Ancient history. I'm talking about modern.
Yeah. You're talking. I mean, people don't even remember that he was the Colts coach.
Andy Reid, excellent. Mike Shanahan wasn't so good in his first go-round, and also ancient history. Pete Carroll wasn't so good in his first go-around.
Pete Carroll became much more attractive to the NFL because of what he did in college.
Tom Coughlin, sure, ancient history. Marv Levy, ancient history. Marty Schottenheimer, ancient history. Dungy, sure. Sid Gilman's 10th on the list.
Hey,
Weeb Eubank.
Sid Gilman.
Don Coryell. So, I mean, if you want to pick out three exceptions, Jared, good for you. Look at all the rest.
All right, Stilley, you did get the show closer. Congratulations. Coming up next, Chasing Big Joe, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5.
Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your lock. See you tomorrow. See ya.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.